Good afternoon, and you're listening to Europe On Air. I'm Frank Connolly, and this afternoon we're discussing the economic crisis and its effects on Ireland. I'm joined in studio here at Near FM, 90.3 FM, by Michelle Murphy, research and policy analyst with Social Justice Ireland, Ivan Cooper, director of advocacy at The Wheel, and Cormac Staunton, policy analyst at Task. Now, Michelle, it's a huge topic, obviously, the economic crisis and its effects on Ireland, looking back over the last 5 years. From your perspective and from that of Social Justice Ireland, how would you try to summarise the effects on, and particularly on the people that you you try to represent?
Well, I suppose to summarise it, you would say there's been, over the past 5 years, there's been a huge increase in social risks. Those who are most vulnerable have paid the most. The poorest 10% have lost 18.4% of their disposable income, and the top 10% have just lost 11.4%. So your disposable income is your income after tax and welfare. So for someone on the lowest income decile who is already vulnerable and surviving on a very low income, to lose almost 20% of their disposable income over a 5 to 6 year period is huge. You have rising poverty numbers, rising child poverty. We've had cuts to our health service. Like, our health service at the moment is barely being held together. You've had cuts to education. You see in the latest figures the cuts to allowance, we say the telephone, fuel allowances to older people. You're seeing rising poverty numbers among older people now. And what you've also seen is a complete lack of vision in terms of the where we should be going socially. We keep talking about the economic effects of the crisis, but we're not giving enough consideration to the social consequences and the social effects of the crisis. And the long-term cost of the social consequences is going to be enormous. And yet this is not factored into any decision-making. It's not factored into budgetary decisions. It wasn't really factored into our the local election or the European election campaigns. Sure. People weren't talking about, you know, what should a social Europe be? How do we reassert it? And what should a social Ireland be? I mean, what services should people expect? How are we going to pay for them, and how are we going to deal with changes in our demographics?
Let's stick though to the the initial question. We can come to those things later. Let me just throw in something. This is a Europe On Air program, mm-hmm. so this program will be listened to by many, many more people outside of Ireland at some point. Compared to the situation, for instance, with the Greek people, hundreds of thousands have thrown out of public service jobs, social welfare almost non-existent. Poverty endemic. Everything is relative, isn't it? Put a bit of flesh on what you're saying. What sort of effects has this had? I know you're mentioning the decile, mm-hmm. and you're an analyst, so you're going to talk about the percentages. But in terms of the real effects in Irish society, how are they visible to somebody who would perhaps drop in here from some other planet and see the changes in a period of about 5 or 6 years? On the effects on real people, what has happened in their lives?
I mean, the obvious one is job losses, mm-hmm. for a start. And we have produced a report looking at across 7 countries in Europe. Mm. We have something like 250,000, I think, people over the period lost their jobs. But what you see is a huge increase in the number of long-term unemployed. That's people unemployed for more than 1 year. And that is a massive problem because they're moving further and further away from the labour market. And as we recall from the 80s, it's those people who got left behind then. And the reality is, unless we do something about it now, those people will be left behind again. Sure. The other issue is you have nearly 200,000 children living in poverty in Ireland in 2014.
The definition of poverty in that sense.
That's at risk of poverty. So you're below 60% of the median income, which is €10,600 for a single person in a year. Those are the latest figures. So 200,000 children living in poverty is totally unacceptable in Ireland today. So is the fact that we are now opening, I think it was a month ago, we opened a food bank. I mean, there shouldn't be food banks in Ireland in 2014. That's totally unacceptable. We do have the wealth in this country to actually be able to provide for the citizens, but it all depends on what choices are made.
Sure, we're back to the policy issue. Okay, let me go on to Ivan. Ivan, you're a director of advocacy at The Wheel, and that's an organisation that represents a wide range of different organisations in the community and voluntary sector. So you're seeing this as well at first hand, the effects on families, on children, as Michelle referred to, and on young people. What does it mean? How is Ireland different now than it was 5 years ago before the tsunami of the crisis hit us?
Well, rather than describe all of the change which Michelle has described there, which all of us would understand, from our point of view, it's the effect that it's had on communities that are served in many instances in terms of essential services that are available to them because of the way we do social services in Ireland by community and voluntary or charitable organisations. So people may be surprised to know in Ireland, I mean, Ireland's a country of 4 million people, but we have over 8,500 charitable organisations in Ireland, many of which are funded directly or indirectly through their own fundraising, and over 60% of the funds in receipt by those organisations actually comes from the state in the form of grants for providing community or individual services of one sort or another. So it's the income that those organisations receive through either the grants they get from government or the funds they raise themselves, that's been really severely affected since the crisis began. So,
okay. So the government has cut back on funding these organisations. Yeah. Okay. And so we're saying that's an effect of the economic crisis, are we?
It's the way that
and
effect has flowed through.
And people have stopped giving because they don't have the money to give to charities.
Yeah, I mean, just there's a couple of numbers might be of interest. So we conducted some research there last year. We're going to be publishing it, in fact, shortly. And since 2009, over 60% of Ireland's non-profits have experienced a decrease in their income. And the majority of those, so 60% of that number that experienced the decrease, have experienced a decrease of between 11 and 25%, okay, mm-hmm. over that time frame. So organisations have been faced with having to do something about that.
What sort of organisations? What do they do?
We've got organisations that are providing services for people with disabilities. We've got organisations that are providing community care services, home care services for the elderly. The whole gamut of community services that are out there, services for young people. So these organisations have been faced with looking at, and at the same time as that's been happening, the survey also indicates that demand for those for the services they're providing has increased by up to 30%. So there's kind of a perfect storm scenario going on from that point of view. And those organisations have therefore been faced with choices. And we've heard ISPCC as recently as yesterday, the day before, talking about having to significantly cut back the service that they offer, the Childline service. And BOHR, the Overseas Development Organisation, are looking at laying off 19 staff as an immediate result of the collapse in their fundraising. And for the benefit of your listeners who aren't familiar with the Irish context, there have been some scandals in the recent past in relation to charities which have made a bad situation worse. So the evidence suggests that 11 to 25% drop in income that has been more or less consistent since 2008, that's what it's resulted in, has been compounded by these recent developments which have caused members of the public to consider again their donations. And the evidence is indicating that amplification of the income drop may be up to 10% on top of that.
Let me just throw a bit of a devil's advocacy myself into this. The crisis has, in a sense, also exposed fault lines in not just the functioning of the state, the functioning of the government and its agencies, but also the functioning of this myriad, as you say, of charity networks and organisations. Because nobody actually had a close look at this. But now that the state has to look at every penny it spends because of the pressure put on it as a result of the crisis, it's opening, in some cases, a can of worms where they discover that, for instance, money from the health service executive going into particular charities has been, to say the least, misused, in some cases stolen, and certainly not put to the purposes as intended. So in a way, some people would argue that this clean out has done no harm, and that public monies used by this huge variety of charities is now being held to account.
Yeah, I think that an important missing piece of the context here, playing devil's advocate, is, you know, there's much truth in what you're saying there, Frank. There's practices which have developed over many years because of the way we've chosen to do public services in Ireland. Now, this is, we often hear, why are there so many charities in Ireland? Well, perhaps the real question is, why is it that we require so many charities? Mm-hmm. What is it that's not being done or not being provided for people and communities by the state that has led to such an enormous... But then we also need to be careful, because if we look at the international evidence, Ireland doesn't have any more, let's say, charitable organisations or community development organisations or voluntary organisations than our compatriots in Northern Ireland, Scotland and England and Wales. In actual fact, we've got lower numbers than they do. So there's something about the way we do community development and something about the way that communities understand that they wish to take a lead in providing for themselves, if you see what I mean, with support.
Well, let's talk about that community and voluntary sector, because there's a section of that which supplying, as you say, services to the disabled, to drug users, to elderly people, to children, for instance. We have a creche around the corner here in Darndale, which is a hugely public service for hundreds of children every day, and it looks like it may be forced to close for lack of funds. These are directly funded by the state through the health service or whatever. And I know from Brian Harvey's research, who's a leading social researcher in Dublin, that they've all experienced dramatic cuts to their income. Where does the wheel firstly come into that in relation to that issue? And what's your perspective on the swathe of cuts to communities and community voluntary sector organisations?
Yeah, well, Brian's research demonstrates clearly that there has been, and let's, using the framework that he's developed, a disproportionate, would be a polite way of putting it, extent of cuts applied to what might be seen as being soft discretionary budget lines in certain government departments. Expenditure headers to the community and voluntary sector. So there's no doubt that the government, like our line is clear, we've always been clear on it, government must and should be continuing to resource essential public services and organisations that provide them.
Is government using this as an excuse, for instance, a largely centre-right led government using this crisis as an excuse to wipe out the
I don't know,
sector?
Frank. I don't know. I wouldn't want to come to a conclusion that there's some kind of a conspiracy on in relation to it. I think what's more likely is that they are genuinely seen as softer budget lines affecting vulnerable people who aren't often in a position to push back, to fight back and to defend
They're the more vulnerable in society.
So it's really more a question of power and the path of least resistance with regard to those.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that, Ivan. That's interesting. Yeah. I just want to talk to Cormac Stanton, policy analyst with TASC. Now, TASC is an organisation that advocates action on social change, and you do a lot of very good policy analysis and promotion of equality, economic and democratic accountability. Tell us, what's your take on the effects of the economic crisis and in human terms, as I keep trying to come back to?
Well, for us, I think the big focus has been on the rise in economic inequality in Ireland, not just over the last 6 years, but over the last 30 or more years. What we've seen is that the top 1% have increased their share of the national income by a huge degree, while, you know, people on low incomes have seen a much more moderate increase over that period. And in fact, you know, the 90% of people have seen their share of national income go down. And this has tremendous impact on the society. We know that societies that are more equal do better. But it also has an impact on the economy. And so what we would say is that in order to bring something forward, to look to the future, we should be looking at a more equitable distribution of income. We should be looking at a more equal society that can provide the essential public services that are needed and that can give people a way out of this crisis.
Okay, well, that's all very well, and it's all very laudable. We should have a more equal society. But if you look, for instance, at the most detailed recent study by Thomas Piketty, which is a study of the trends towards I suppose, controlled by the smallest sector of society over the wealth of society. Over the past, he's looked at it, capital in the 21st century, he's looked at it over a period of 200 years. And this process, this trend, with the exception of the post-war years in Europe, perhaps, the 20 years after the World War, Second World War, this trend has been going on for centuries, the control or monopolization of wealth by an increasingly small number of people across the globe.
Yes, absolutely. That is what he shows, is that there's an inevitability about capital going to the top. Mm-hmm. But also he does show that there was a time, there are instances where societies can be more equal and they can function very, very well. If you look at the United States or Europe after World War II, you mm-hmm. had far more equal societies, massive levels of growth. So I don't think what he's saying is that we can't ever get away from this. What he's actually saying is that there are policies that you can implement that would give you greater equality, better societal outcomes, and good levels of growth.
But of course, the reason for that, after the absolute devastation wreaked by the Second World War, was that monies had to go into the middle classes and working classes, particularly in the United States, in order to create a society that could function economically, that could actually have taxable tax income. So we're now in a period where that trend is being reversed, as you've said. We're back to a period where the old ways of the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer seem to be the direction we're heading in. Now, you're saying, let's stop that. How are you going to stop it?
Well, there's a number of different ways that you can approach this. For us in TASC, we've just done a big analysis of the tax system in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And we've looked at the particular instances of how our tax system works. And the most important thing to say is that in Ireland, we only take in 30% of our national income in tax. That's three quarters of the European average. So if you look at other European countries, they take in 40%. They're able to provide much better public services than we are in Ireland. And that 30% level has been constant before the crisis, after the crisis, and it's what is being projected. So if we broadened our tax base, we brought in more taxes from different sources, then we could actually provide the services that we need.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that. Michelle, you touched on this subject about how we're going to restore the balance towards equality in your contribution earlier. How does Social Justice Ireland see changes in the tax system moving to create more equality?
Well, as Cormac mentioned, you need to broaden the tax mm-hmm. base, and we also need to bring up our overall level of taxation as a percentage of GDP. At the moment, if we brought it up to what is still considered low tax by European average, so 34.9%, we're at a gap of between 5 and 7 billion every year in terms of what we collect. So if you consider that this
year... Between what we spend and what we collect?
No, in terms of the taxation we collect, we could have between an extra 5 and 7 billion. And if you consider that this year we're going to spend 8 billion servicing the national debt alone, not even paying it off, just servicing it, mm. it puts it into context. So you need to broaden the tax base. Look at things, changing our national accounting system, and look at things like including resource depletion in it, because it is our environmental resources that we should be enhancing them, but if they're being depleted, that should be accounted for, and the people who are depleting them should be paying for the use of such resources. We need to look at introducing, for example, a financial transactions tax. Look at our corporate tax rate and introducing a minimum effective rate, so that at least there's a level playing field and everybody at least pays the same in a minimum sense. So those are all issues that you need to look at. I mean, we shouldn't be focusing. We have a lot of discussion at the moment from the minister about looking at income tax and perhaps reducing income tax in the next budget. We need to be moving away from a focus on income tax and look at broadening the base as a whole, because the reason...
Well, broadening the base, who mm-hmm. precisely are you asking, and how much to pay more in
well,
tax?
Well, for a start, you need to look at the corporate sector.
So that that's they corporation should tax, which is...
Pay a fair
multinationals
share.
Are paying something in the order of 2 to 3% yeah, on the billions that they,
exactly.
that they accumulate in profits every year.
The way our taxation system should work is that those who benefit most from our system should contribute the most, but that is not necessarily how it works at the moment. And if we are going to provide...
Who are those who benefit the most?
Well, you would look at some corporations, those people who we'd say perhaps earn over 100,000, 200,000, but perhaps they're not.
Which now, 100 or 200?
Well, for example, just take 200,000 for example. But if you look at the Revenue Commissioner's figures, excuse me, there wouldn't necessarily be a huge number of people because most people, they would take shares or pensions, those sort of issues. But the tax system doesn't necessarily treat everybody equitably because if you earn over 100,000 and you're a PAYE worker, the USC for somebody who is a self-employed person earning 100,000 is higher for the self-employed person, 3% higher than it is for the PAYE worker.
Sure,
so it should be the same for
USC
everybody.
Is a crippling tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people at both lower income level and as you say, higher incomes. But listen, Ivan, can I come to you on this issue? And we're all talking about equality. I'm still trying to find out how we achieve it. Both Cormac and Michelle have talked about adjustments to the tax system, that could be a way of levelling the playing pitch, so to speak. What's the Queedle saying?
Look, what does it mean? It means equality of outcome. So we need to debate in Ireland with regard to how we can ensure that all Irish people experience the same quality of services, right? Education services, health services, social services. For example, could we explore the idea of a guaranteed basic income for every person who lives in Ireland?
Okay.
Everybody in receipt of a guaranteed basic income, so that's sufficient to live life with dignity. It's possible. Costings have been done on it. It's been demonstrated that it's feasible. Okay. There's a radical idea.
Okay, we've only got a couple of minutes left. I want to put it to you this way.
Yeah.
And it applies across Europe as well. If you elect parties to government that reflect the interests of the wealthy in society.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you're going to get.
What are you going to get?
You're going to get the interests of the wealthy.
Cormac, what do you think on this?
Yeah, I think there is...
Sure, it's a political issue, isn't it, at the end of the day, who people choose, and we're literally against the clock. So what do you finish off? Give us the last word there on this.
Well, I think a lot of it can come down to perceptions. I think at the moment we're hearing talk about cuts to the higher rate of income tax to benefit average earners. And what we found through our research is that it wouldn't benefit average earners. It would benefit, you know, average earners is someone 35,000 euro, the benefit of a cut to the higher rate. People don't pay the higher rate of tax at that, or they pay a small amount at the higher rate, and that it's really people further up the chain who benefit. So,
give us a line on that.
Yeah, Frank, just jump in and just say, look, it relates to a point made by Michelle earlier on. We lack vision here in Ireland today. We need a vision of what's possible. We're constantly being told what we can afford. The issue here is there's a lot of wealth in Ireland. There's a lot of wealthy people still in Ireland. Mm. There's a lot of people who've effectively been unaffected by
and
the two
biggest parties in the country tend to support that sector.
There's a middle ground consensus there. Now, the recent elections, the European elections, might provide some straws in the wind in relation to Irish people.
Okay, Michelle, finally, and then we have to go. Michelle, what would you say on this? People choose those who run the country, and unfortunately they tend to reflect the interests of the wealthy.
At the moment they do as well, but I think you'll find next time around at the next general election, people will probably be thinking, what has happened to our society and what sort of society do I want my child to grow up in, and is this the direction I want to be going in? And I think perhaps they'll be demanding some real answers from the people who knock on their doors.
Okay, and we got a flavour of that last week with the extraordinary change, momentous change indeed, in the local and European elections. Listen, I'd like to thank you. I'm sorry for rushing at the end. This is the Europe on Air programme. And we've been discussing the economic crisis and its effects on Ireland with Michelle Murphy from Social Justice Ireland, Ivan Cooper, The Wheel, and Cormac Staunton from TASC. Thank you very much for joining us. And we'll see you back here on Near FM very soon.
Europe on air.
Europa por las ondas.
Europa auf Sendung.
Europe on air.
Europe on air. Near FM's new weekly half-hour programme looking at themes including migration, education, mass media, religion, agriculture, gender, environmental policies and much more. Tune in every Thursday 4:30 to 5 p.m. Europe on Air radio campaign has been financed by the European Union. The contents of the radio shows reflect only the author's views, and the Commission is not responsible for any use that may be made of the information they contain.
This is 90.3 Near FM.